It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's chair speaker. I'd like to introduce to you a lady that has a sobriety date of January 2nd, 2005, which means that she's just recently celebrated 10 years of sobriety. And her favorite AA slogan is, "It's a design for living that works." And I just happened to have, our group just happened to have a 10-year chip laying around, and we thought we might present this to her right now. So I'm going to introduce Pat T. from Visalia.
My name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Pat.
I am sober today. Like cold. By the grace of God, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the sponsors, I've had two sponsors, and I have a sponsor today, the fellowship, the friends of AA. This is a program that I never thought was going to change my life around the way it did. I'm going to start with just a brief bio. My mom is full-blooded Native American. She gave birth to me when she was 16 and to my brother when she was 17. When she turned 21, she left us with my dad and she went back to the reservation because her sisters were wanting her to come home and party. She really didn't have, all she had was kids, and then I never saw her again until I went to look for her when I was 30, and that's a whole other story. But my dad remarried right away. I had a stepmom by the age of 7, and it was different. You know, there was something different about having a stepmom, you know, that she did the best she could. I know that today because I ended up being a stepmom myself twice. But I was a good kid. I was probably what you would call a people pleaser, overachiever. Did what I was told, got good grades, never got in trouble. Then high school came and, you know, the experimenting with drinking. The first time I took a drink, I was 13 at my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary, and it was champagne, which was like, this is really good. And but didn't drink again for a few years. I mean, that was like, you know, it was the uncle sneaking drinks to the kids, you know, the nieces and nephews, that story. So right at the end of high school and then after high school, there was a lot of partying, and I loved to drink, and I wanted hard liquor. It wasn't just beer. I don't even remember beer being part of the party. You know, it was, give me Canadian Mist, a small bottle, and I want my own. And I would chug that and chase it with fruit beer. That was my drink. I tried a lot of other issues, but I always went back to alcohol. I did, because I was that good kid and didn't want to get in trouble, I didn't want to get hooked on drugs. So I just stayed with the alcohol, and I would drink a lot of it. I met a guy, and lo and behold, after dating him for a while, found out he was married. And he didn't tell me that at first, and I ended up staying with him. And he left his family, and we started our own family. And that didn't go very well. About 10 years after, we ended up divorcing, and I kind of did the same thing. I wasn't drinking in that relationship, but it was my just the need to want to be wanted or to have a role. We had two children, my two sons. When that marriage ended, they were young, like 7 and 8 years old. And then another guy, well, he was married too, you know, broke that family up. And that didn't last, but 6 years later, he was going out on me already. And it was kind of like that, what comes around goes around. I always felt guilty about it, and I knew that it wasn't right, but I stuck with it. And that marriage ended, and that's when my drinking started. And I drank. I was secretly drinking, and drinking a lot, like drinking when I got home from work, drinking with over-the-counter sleeping pills for years. And then finally it was like, you got to go. It was a roller coaster of a relationship at the end. I would take him back and he'd leave and take him back and he'd leave. And this is part of that, why I like that Design for Living That Works, because I was a mess. I had no direction. I was trying to do this on my own, trying to make decisions that I thought were good for me, and they were really, really bad. I had friends telling me, you know, what are you doing to yourself? And kind of like drama in a way, but it was in 2003, and I'm going out and drinking, driving and drinking, drinking and driving, you know, going home with people I don't even know who they are. 2003, I get my first DUI. Well, I'm in a blackout. I had been in a blackout for probably a good 6 or 7 hours. Don't know how I got where I was at. And I thought that was the worst experience ever. I was embarrassed, ashamed. I was really angry at myself. And I did what I had to do. I went to court, paid the fines, you know, fessed up to it, did that DUI class thing. They put me on a court card. I went to AA meetings. I think it was 12 of them. I probably did 10, but I went to like 10 different meetings because I was sat by the door, back by the door, so I could leave right away and just get this behind me, like everything else. And in here I was saying, I'm never going to do this again. I'm going to watch where I'm going. I'm going to watch what I'm drinking. I'm not going to leave my drink because I thought somebody put something in my drink. I used to take my youngest son at the time. He was underage at the time. He would go with me to the bars. I would allow him to have beer in the refrigerator. That was April of 2003. So that whole next year, I did everything different. I drank at different places. I watched what I drank. I was still drinking and driving, but I tried to control it. I even had like hypnotherapy, and the lady got me to, I was telling her the story that I got this DUI, but I just want to have two drinks. So she made this tape for me to listen so I can play it a lot. Like I needed to be told in my head, just have two drinks. And she says it very calmly, like it's a meditation tape, and I just want to be a two-drink lady. Just want to be a two-drink lady. Two drinks, two drinks. And I would play that before I would go out thinking, maybe this will work. Maybe I'll remember two drinks. And it never worked. But two drinks. So that didn't work. And that was in the middle of 2004. The end of 2004, I was I went back to drinking the way I always did. I tried to count them. Forget it. I would ask the waitress, don't take them away, because I wanted to keep track of how many I was drinking. But they had to clean off that table. I lost track. But I didn't know that till I got here, that phenomenon of craving. Once you have that first drink, you can't stop. I mean, some people can stop. I couldn't stop. It was, I got a letter of, like, a warning from work that said my behavior was unacceptable at the year-end meeting, and that was in October of 2004. And I honestly thought, what did I do? I didn't do anything weird or odd or out of place, or, but it was. I mean, I look back on it now thinking, I'm out there making snow angels in the snow. I'm loud. They're yelling out the window to tell me to be quiet. I lost my keys in the snow. I had to have my car towed from the Tenaya Lodge down to Fresno. We had to rekey my car. That was October. December, right after Christmas, I decided to go out. I mean, it was Christmas was over. It was a Tuesday night. And I was driving home. And I used to kind of, wondered if I could, can I just go home? Do I have to always go out? And I distinctly remember thinking, I should just go home. Or should I just go have a beer? Just one. Because I live by Applebee's and Acres and Goshen over there. So I was going, I could turn that way and just go have a beer. Or I should just go home. Just go home. And I went and had a beer. And I had a tall. And then I had another tall. And I had another tall. Then I had a short one. Then they wanted me to try the shot. Because it tasted like peanut butter and jelly. So I had to have that. And then I had a beer to go. Not to go, but it was my, this was the one I was going to drink and then go. So I drank that short one, and then I went home. And I went home, and I changed my clothes, and I went out and drank some more. And this was, that was normal. That was just a normal routine. That's what I did. And the reason why I remember it so much, because I went to this bar, people were giving me more beers, and, you know, I parked out on Main Street. I was at, I think it was Cadillac Lounge at the time, I don't remember, that bar over there. And then I just get up and leave, and I go get in my car, and it's the only car on Main Street, and I don't remember anything after that. I don't remember driving it. I don't remember going through McDonald's until the lights came on behind me while I'm going down Demery. And I've got a hamburger, and I pull over, and here I am, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening again. I mean, it's that really, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening again. It was like, I already felt like a failure already. This was, I didn't even know what was going to happen. I was afraid. Fear of what was going to happen to me, my job, whatever. So I get out of the car and he looks at me after he runs some tests, or I don't know what he was running my license plate or whatever, and he goes, "Do you have a drinking problem?" I'm not saying anything. I'm a pretty quiet person. Even when I'm drinking, I wasn't that loud. But and I looked at him and he goes, "I'm the one who arrested you the first time." And I didn't say anything. He just cuffed me and put me in the back seat, and then I don't remember anything until they filed. I had this bright idea. I didn't want to do the breathalyzer. I said, "No, I want to take blood." I'm only like 3 minutes from the jail on over there. On, I don't remember any of it. I they booked me. The next day, my youngest son kind of comes and picks me up, and he picked me up the other time too, and I went and found my car, and it was parked in the cul-de-sac, and but the back tire was up on the curb. And pretty embarrassing. And that week, I didn't know what to do, and New Year's was coming up. So I rented about 4 or 5 DVDs. I was going to watch movies all night. And my kids were, they kind of like were feeling sorry for me, you know, and they were drinking. I mean, if you're drinking, you tell somebody, "Hey, just don't drink and drive. Go out, get a taxi." That's what they told me. So I took their advice. And I went out and I drank. I drank a lot. I was really wanting to drown that. All that was behind me. Drink it away. And I couldn't get drunk. You couldn't have gave me enough alcohol. It was just, I was done. I drove home. I did not get a DUI. I am surprised that I didn't get one. I was just really grateful I made it home. I called EAP on between that day and the 7th, somewhere between the 3rd and the 4th, 5th, somewhere in there. The guy says, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I was crying. It was like 10 o'clock at night when I made this phone call, and Gabe got me some outside counseling information, and I knew where there was a meeting on Sunday night. It was the Blue Room. I thought, I'll go to that meeting. I really knew then I needed to take somebody's advice, that all my thinking was getting me nowhere. In fact, my life was getting worse and worse. So I went to the Blue Room, and unknowingly, I really started taking the suggestions. I was done. I was defeated. The girl at the table, Tina, she was sitting there with her son, and she waved me to come sit by her. And I could have stayed where I was at. I was sitting by the door, in the chair by the door in the back. And I went and I sat by her, and I thought, I got to do this. I got to do something. And I didn't care if this was not going to be fun the rest of my life, because what was happening to me was I was not having fun. I was really disgusted at myself. So I had already resorted that in my head, that I'm going to do whatever it takes already. So she gave me the meeting list, and she circled the meetings, and I went to those meetings, and I would see her at those meetings. And what alcoholics do for each other is they started telling the other women in the program, look for this girl, she's new. So if you see her, you know. And the friends I have today are the ones who took their arms around me and have loved me since I got here. And they're still my friends today. That's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. I got a sponsor. Well, before I got the sponsor, I was going to the Lana Club every morning, and this was in January, because I was really going to do this 90 meetings in 90 days. I'm this overachiever, and I'm going to do this 90 meetings in 90 days, and I didn't care what night of the week it was or what day of the week it was. I was going to go be there, and sometimes I was the third one. I was in the third row, and three rows in front of me were empty, and five rows behind me were empty. I'm sitting there. Okay, I'm ready for class. And then my friends would show up. And because they knew I was there on a Saturday night by myself. And I got invited to go to conventions, and I went, and it was fun. And all that resorting to not having fun started to change. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to go to this. I went to this convention, and I got to room with this, I'm going to say their names, Tina and Monica. And it was a lot of fun. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was actually opening up to what this program had to offer. You know, the willingness, the open-mindedness, and the honesty. And I think the honesty was the hardest thing. When I started going through the steps, I didn't know me. And so I learned to write. So I would just write and write and write. And I got to start to see me. Magic happens when you write. Another thing about people helping people, my sister just went in for tonsillectomy, and she's had cancer, and she wasn't sure what the problem was. And two nights ago, 4:20 in the morning, I woke up. And I was wide awake. And I thought, okay. And usually when I do that, I was taught a long time ago that pray for somebody. Somebody needs prayer. About 10 minutes later, my sister texts us. This is 4:30 in the morning. I thought, why? That's odd. And she was just telling me this. She's afraid. And all I could think of is what I tell another alcoholic or another person, and that was, because her list was like, I need to clean my house, I need to go grocery shopping, I need to do this. She's got all these needs I need to do, and it's like, I said, make your list and let people help you. You know, let us help you. Let us, another alcoholic will help you go through the steps, go through the book with you, and you will feel your life change. That's what happened to me. I heard God, you know, I was kind of afraid of that. I was heard service. I was afraid of that too. But luckily I put that aside and I just kind of let the program just work by going to meetings, participating. My youngest son quit drinking. If he drinks, it's probably once a year, maybe. I don't even think he drinks anymore. This is a kid that had 18-pack in the fridge all the time, and I would take him to the bars with me just so I'd have somebody to go with me to the bars. And he's able to, by me just doing what I'm supposed to be doing and not preaching to them, like they said earlier, like, don't preach to people. But if I'm just the example, then they see the change. They know and are grateful for this program because it changed their mom's life and it changed their life. My youngest son graduated from Berkeley and now he's in law school. Not anything I did, but because he can do this soberly. You know, he thanks me for showing him a way how to live life soberly. Thanks me. It's not me. It's God. I didn't know about that, you know, my higher power, the one I was afraid of, the God that was going to punish me, and, you know, the one I grew up with was a punishing God, and I've learned that it's not a punishing God. You know, I heard it in a meeting that someone said, just make a list of the things you want in your higher power. And I did. I made that list. And the next thing that person said was, that's your higher power. So it made it easy for me to realize that my higher power loves me no matter what, forgives me for everything, understands me. I felt so misunderstood. Protects me. I have everything I need. And more, I have more than I need and everything. Everything I need and more than, no. I have more than I need. I don't have everything I want. That's what it is. And my oldest son, there was a period in his life a few years ago that was really scary. He had a manic episode, and he was drinking heavily, but at this time he goes, Mom, I'm not drinking, and he goes, really, I'm not taking anything, but he had a real bipolar manic episode, and I'm telling you what, it scared me to death. I felt fear. If anybody's had fear that you could touch, that it was right in front of you, any kind of fear, it's real. I understand that. And all I could do was thank God for the end result. Thank God for the outcome. Whatever it is you have, because I had no control over it. Whatever was going to happen was going to happen. And when I could tell him, when I would see him, because he was so afraid himself, is that God is right here with you. God's right here with you. That was all I could do, to repeat it over and over and over again, because it was a very, very scary time. And today he's so creative. I almost call him, he started his own little app business thing to help single parents, and he's a good dad, and he's, both of them called me on my birthday this year to wish me a happy birthday, 10 years, And what everybody was telling me prior to that day, because it's a one-day time program, I was like playing it off like, it's just another day. That he could handwrite me a card and say, 10 years is a big deal. And how proud him and his brother are of me. And that's a gift that makes all this worthwhile. The mom I talked about that left, I met her in 1987 in Fallon, Nevada. That's where the tribe reservation is. And she was in a park drinking out of a half a gallon bottle of vodka. She died in 1996. She was 56 years old of alcohol-related diseases. And that's really sad. My brothers, in 2003, when I got that first DUI, he OD'd in July of 2003. He was an alcoholic that, you know, alcohol didn't do enough and he turned to drugs. And I thought, that's not me. That's not going to happen to me. And it does kill. Alcohol kills. It'll start out like it's okay, and then it doesn't get better. My life today is amazing. That hole in my soul that you'll hear that saying is filled up. I can look people in the eye. I have the tools of the program. I have a wonderful sponsor who, when I grow up, I want to be like her. And one of the first, because I got a few more minutes, my first year, I learned to not regret the past, to accept life as it was, to keep my expectations low, to let go absolutely, and let God work. And it sounds like the tall order, but it works. I've learned to meditate. I've gone, you know, because I wanted to learn that. I wanted the, what is that, meditation? I think it was year six, went to a spiritual retreat, and actually paid attention, and, you know, I get good stuff out of going to retreats and conventions, bringing stuff back to share with the group. And the meditation part is that you can't do it wrong. You just sit still, be quiet, and pay attention. So if I can do those three things, anything else that's, if I don't know what to do sometimes, and it's that simple prayer of muddy waters, let stand, will clear. And it works every time. I don't care what it is. It could be relationships, work issues, family, paying attention, and being still, the answers will come. That's what I've found. It's a design for living that works. And if you are new and you want your life, you don't want that life you had before, and you have an alcohol or drug problem, Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps work. Every morning I get up, the first thing I do is I get on my knees. And I started that about 5 years ago. I didn't always do that. and I say the third step prayer. And I try to read something out of either Daily Reflections or 24-hour book. Sometimes I'll wait till I get to work and I'll get it off my phone, an app, and just incorporate something like that. Learn to balance out my life. You know, it was after the 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, I did a lot of meetings. It's like I can't do 90 meetings in 90 days today. But I did the 90 meetings in 90 days, and it gave me a good footing. You know, building a good, firm foundation in this program will last a lifetime. You'll build your house one room at a time, and it is really, really worth it. I thank you, Bill, for asking me to share tonight, and keep coming back. That's all I got.